To us, this is a very important day, the birth of one of our most prominent leaders, perhaps the most prominent leaders of the people of South Africa, who grew up in struggle and fought for freedom to a point where he became one of the major symbols of peace, freedom, and justice in the world. I'm one of those who grew up became conscious as a young boy when he was already in prison. Mm-hmm. And those days, his name could not be mentioned publicly. His name and his other colleagues, comrades, Walter Sisulu, Govan Mbeki, were mentioned in whispers, because the regime, in its wisdom, had thought that their incarceration would mean the end of this people of South Africa's struggle for freedom. But they didn't bank on the fact that the memories carried on for generations, which inspired him first when in the crawl in his native Mvezo, when the old people told him about the glory days of the African people before the colonizers conquered us. Mm-hmm. So the same message was carried on by other generations to inspire the next generation, to inspire the generation that took up the struggle in 1976, the youth of South Africa, who themselves were inspired by the people of the rest of Africa, people of Mozambique, of Zimbabwe, people of Angola, and all the people of Guinea-Bissau, all the people all over the world, mm-hmm. who have been struggling for freedom.
Right. And Ambassador, the Mandela Day asks us all to take action and spare change and also make every day a Mandela Day. What can the people of South Sudan, what leaf can they borrow from this?
I think one of the most important things that the people of South Sudan must learn from is, first of all, that conflict cannot, continued conflict cannot, is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Continued conflict prevents the people realizing their dreams, the improvement of the people's livelihood, peace within communities, peace in families, and the fact that the country cannot develop whilst conflict prevails. Whatever differences people may have had, mm-hmm. Leaders and people can find within themselves solutions to ensure that their country achieves peace. If you look at the situation that President Mandela and his generation managed to resolve in South Africa, mm-hmm. many thought that it was an intractable conflict that could never be resolved. A conflict that had both the characteristic of what our leaders called internal colonialism, the oppressors being living together with us. But that conflict we managed to resolve it, because our leaders decided to think beyond mm-hmm. the differences that we had. I think that's a message that all South Sudanese should take. And President Mandela emphasized the importance of reconciliation at community level, nationally, across tribes, across race, that people could live together in harmony and in peace.
Hmm. Talking about reconciliation, South Sudan is also has gone through what South Africa has gone, and division in the country and all that. And South Africa had a specific way of, you know, how they reconcile. In terms of reconciliation, as the Revitalized Peace Agreement is being implemented, some people are still bitter of what happens to them or happened to them during the conflict. What mechanism can South Sudan use in order to ensure that they reconcile and become one country, despite all the differences that they've had over the years?
You're saying that people are bitter. Wherever there's conflict, people are always bitter. And people fight against injustice and fight for freedom, for social justice, and for peace. But what people must realize, irrespective of whatever pain they've undergone, they must realize that the dead who died during the fighting, who died, killed unjustly, would like those who are living to live better lives, to carry on their heritage. They wouldn't want an endless war. I think that's what all people should realize. In any family, we had what we called in South Africa the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Mm-hmm. None of the witnesses in that commission ever said the people who killed my husband, my son, my daughter must also be killed. And I believe this could be the case even here in South Sudan, especially if the leaders, if the leaders of South Sudan decide that that's the culture that they will try to inculcate amongst all South Sudanese. That's the narrative or message that they carry through and ensure that South Sudan is at peace with itself and with its people.
Yes. Now, Ambassador, Nelson Mandela was a towering figure, and as you narrated to us, that you at least had a chance to be part of the regime to see what happened to him. Now, for some of the younger generations, just bring us to speed. How do you think was Nelson Mandela groomed to be the person that he was and the person that everybody is looking up to?
Thank you for that question. I think it's very important because you will know that there's always that debate in, for instance, in psychology and that nature-nurture debate. Sometimes President Mandela or figures like him everywhere else, they are misrepresented as if they just came from the blue. Nelson Mandela is a product of his family, of his community, of his people. Nelson Mandela grew up in the Tembu Royal Kraal. As he says in his books, that he grew up to listen to the elders, relating stories of the old days when our people were still free and when our people experienced freedom and their own livelihood, where they could rear cattle, where they could plant maize and sorghum in the fields without any interruption. But all that ended with colonialism, when our people were dispossessed first of the land, and when the colonialists ultimately in 1913 took 87% of the land and confined the majority of the African people to 13% of the land. That's all right. And they told him about the wars of resistance and the responsibility that leaders had, because in those times our chiefs and kings led our people to battle in defense of the land, in defense of their livelihood, in defense of their women and children. That's all. That's the way he was socialized into that.
Right.
And that's what his life exemplified. He never lost that. He went on to study, to become a university graduate, to become a lawyer. And that is what shaped his life until the last days of his life. And that's not only him. Most of his colleagues, especially his generation, shared those attributes with him. But perhaps let me just say this one thing, which is very important. The example he and his colleagues set also influenced some of the best of the oppressors. I would like to mention here a friend of his and a colleague who they studied law together, an Afrikaner, not just an Afrikaner, a scion of the Afrikaner elite, Abraham Fischer, who died in prison, who the regime refused even that he be given a normal burial. He was inspired by what he saw amongst these other leaders, and he said, I will join this struggle for justice, for social justice, and for peace in South Africa. So that's, in my view, what I can say. He was made by his people, by his community.
Yes. Ambassador, let's go through still reconciliation, which is very, very important. And South Africa has shown the world really how you can get from all that conflict and all what they've gone through, the apartheid, to become one of the most powerful nations in Africa, if not the whole world. How did it go? How did you get to where you are today? What were the things that you did right as South Africa in order to be the nation that South Africa is today?
Well, let me say, to many of us who, I mean, already were adults then, towards the end of apartheid, let's say in the 80s, the reconciliation was not something we we imagined, we foresaw. Like many in the world said, the struggle is intractable.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a fratricidal conflict that will destroy the country. But what was important was that President Nelson Mandela was in prison with his colleagues, and those were in exile, like Oliver Tambo. These were matured leaders. These were leaders whose only pursuit in life was the interests of the people to solve the problems of the common man. This is how they then imagined that, among others, our situation could only be resolved through reconciliation. Let me say this. In 1955, for instance, Albert Luthuli, Nelson Mandela, and other leaders called what was called the Congress of the People, where they drew up a document called the Freedom Charter. That Freedom Charter recognized already that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So from the point of view of the liberation movement in South Africa, from that time on, there was never a question that these colonizers were people from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was accepted that they have already accepted South Africa as a homeland. And therefore it was them who had to change,
mm-hmm,
and accept that the people that they were oppressing, actually our fellow men. This is where leadership comes. President F.W. de Klerk and some of his colleagues began to realize, under the pressure of the ongoing struggle and international isolation, that there was no way except to negotiate with the leaders of the majority of the people. So reconciliation became a fact of life. It was the only way out of the conflict. And it became a solution for us to take South Africa forward. Without trying to prescribe, I think it's the same course, more or less, mm-hmm, that South Sudan should take.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much, Ambassador. Yes, as we embark on to marking this day, are there any activities that are set in Juba?
Yes, there are activities that are set in Juba. And what will happen today, between 10 and 12, there will be a tree planting ceremony on the street between Nyakron Cultural Center and the main campus of Juba, mm-hmm, University of Juba, just not far from the roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like here to thank, among others, but maybe primarily, the incumbent Tigonu, and especially the Minister of Culture, the Youth and Sports, for her sterling a role in inspiring this occasion and providing all the support. We would like also to thank the Governor of Juba and the Mayor of Juba for their involvement and in trying to make sure that this is going to be a success. We expect a chief guest from the government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to guess, but I think mm-hmm, the chief guest is at the appropriate level,
mm-hmm,
and we are really pleased. But let me also congratulate and thank the UNMIS, the United Nations, for taking responsibility in regard, but also particularly one of the agencies, FAO, for sponsoring this occasion, and the rest of the diplomatic community who support us this International Mandela Day.
Yes, Ambassador, just before you go, if you are to pass a key message to the world about Nelson Mandela and this particular day, what could that message be?
I think the message could be that had he been alive, he would deplore the fact that there are wars still ongoing on our continent, in the Sahel, conflict in Eastern DRC, conflict in Somalia, conflict in the Middle East, and he would have implored everyone to consider the lives and livelihoods of the people. That there's no reason for these continuing wars, because peaceful solutions can be found. He would also perhaps would have said something that is close to him, because he also knew many of the leaders of South Sudan, including the late
Dr. John Garang.
He would have congratulated South Sudanese for signing of the RIACs on September 12th last year. But he would have encouraged them and to hold on, to make sure that the South Sudanese parties, the South Sudanese government, make sure that the promise of independence that was welcome by the millions of South Sudanese is realized through the implementation of this peace agreement.
All right. Now, specifically, as we, of course, it's around four months now to the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity, or the revitalized Transitional Government of National Unity, after the 6 months extension, particularly to the leaders of South Sudan at this moment. What message do you have for them?
The message I will have for the South Sudanese is that, yes, there are these 4 months now. It means that the leaders, the implementing mechanisms, must work at haste to ensure that all the outstanding aspects are realized. I've already mentioned that I congratulate President Salva Kiir Mayardit for his upcoming meeting with Dr. Riek Machar. We already imagining that meeting would inject new life into the agreement, and it's something that we believe should happen. It's something that I know, having listened to the president at the dinner he hosted on 10th of July, that he is committed to making this peace work this time. So I hope all South Sudanese parties will join him in this regard. I think what's key now is the management of this peace process, this peace agreement, to ensure that we get to the transitional period. This is not a time for political parties to politic, to grandstand, and to do all of those normal things. South Sudanese has a serious backlog of nation building, of state building. And in this regard, I must say, was just talking on behalf of South Africa, but I know that all hearing from our colleagues in all of the diplomatic missions here in Juba, the world is waiting for South Sudan to make this peace work.
Right. Yes. Now, finally, on this day, the UN urges for action against poverty. What actions are needed to eradicate poverty? Let's look at South Sudan.
I think the first action to eradicate poverty, in my view, and you must understand, I'm not an economist, so but this is. My view in this regard is that I think the first action to deliver on is the peace, that's what, and the security.
Right.
Because South Sudan is blessed, climate, the soil, the vegetation, the everything. The soil here is so fertile. Now, if you want to eradicate poverty, if you have peace, the farmers go get back to their land. Those who are refugees, those who are displaced, get back to their farms, to their villages. They work. The people of South Sudan can feed themselves while the government and other stakeholders carry out the bigger tasks of reconstruction of the building of roads and the building of schools, clinics, and all of that. But the people of South Sudan would meanwhile be able to feed themselves. So that's what I would say simply. I'm of the view that the ordinary people, the man in the street, in the village, understand that. The woman in the street, in the village, understands that. All they want is the assurance that if we start plowing now our crops, we will be able to harvest.